We're
receiving this message. We are Ken Jennings and John Roderick. We speak to you from our present, which we can only assume is your distant past, the turbulent time that was the early 21st century.
Fearing the great cataclysm that will surely befall our civilization, we began this monumental reference of strange and obscure human knowledge. These recordings represent our attempt to compile and preserve wonders and esoterica that would otherwise be lost.
So whether you're listening from an advanced civilization or have just reinvented the technology to decrypt our transmissions, this is our legacy to you.
This is our time capsule. This is the Omnibus. You have accessed entry 302.1C1535, certificate number 48643. Cryonics.
Good morning, James. How are you feeling?
Wait, what?
It's perfectly normal to feel confused. You just spent 120 years in suspended animation.
Are you following these billionaires that want to live forever? I feel like I'm David Letterman. Paulie, have you seen this? Have you seen this about the billionaires?
Hey, yeah. Hey, Dave. Hey.
They want to live forever. Forever, yes.
Yes. Yes. Bermuda.
But you know what I mean, right?
I don't follow any billionaires. If you can believe that, not on any social media site, I have never followed a billionaire. It's a policy.
I don't mean they're sending you their updates about it. But are you aware of this in the culture, these kind of odd libertarian tech CEOs?
Doesn't that go back to the 50s? Haven't weird rich men been trying to live forever since the dawn?
Maybe they were just bad at it. Like Steve Jobs was just like, well, if I get pancreatic cancer, I'll just eat more of stone fruit.
Right.
And
it's possible.
And these Japanese plums will probably do it.
Yeah, it seems like when I hear this story of rich dudes trying to live forever, it's always the dudes I would least like to have live forever.
And the thing is, they're doing it so badly that you really, it's great for me because it lets me not, it doesn't humanize them at all. Mm-hmm. It makes me not confront the very reasonable questions they're asking about what mortality and existence even mean, because I'm like, look at this guy. He's taking his son's plasma 6 times a month, and he looks worse than he did in the last set of pictures.
I think what I'm thinking of is that this occurs to me sometimes, that we're now, 60 years into the era of health?
Yes.
Right?
The era of health.
As a pursuit, right? Like
the first guy jogged.
Vegetarianism and jogging and...
Some of those are older as fads, but the idea that it's something that the average person strives for, I think you're about right.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously they have long, long traditions in other cultures, but...
Yeah, I guess I just called Hinduism a fad.
I mean, vegetarianism.
It'll catch on somewhere.
It's a couple of years old. But it has seemed to me for a while that with now 60 years of pretty solid data, because these are also typically the people that go through their poops with chopsticks and write them down in journals, that if there was some longevity mystery that has been unlocked by the health universe, that there would now be reports of people that started doing it in their 40s in 1970.
And they're now 110.
Yeah. But instead, everyone who lives to be 110, they're all little French ladies who smoke 6 Galois a day.
I like that you're using basically the modern UFO argument, which is, now that we all have camera phones, where are the Bigfoots and the ETs?
Yeah, like...
But you're applying it to jogging.
Yeah, like, where is... Give me one jogger.
Now that we all have these, 60 years of daily journals
yeah.
about our weird sleep fads and intermittent fasting and all the rest.
Yeah, there
Why
should
aren't
be
we seeing
one person who's 120 years old who got there and can attribute it to healthy
some,
living.
To some weird supplement that he was taking.
Because we both grew up in an era where sometimes you would get carob chip cookies if you went to a friend's house whose parents were hippies. And so for our entire lives, we've been occasionally subjected to terrible sweets.
We've been aware of the healthy alternative to everything.
Yes.
And have rejected in almost every case.
Well, and I've watched people absolutely just obsess over trying to live healthier and better. And I know there are people listening that are like, well, maybe we don't live longer, but we live happier, healthier. And I'm like, I don't know, though. I looked at myself in the mirror in the bathroom last night, Ken, and said, I've already exceeded my sell-by date, probably.
Based on your previous conception or just...
Based on...
What your trajectory would have seemed like in your 20s?
100,000 years of human life.
Oh, just that.
To be 50, evolutionary 55 biology. Years old, I have to have... I'm here because we've eliminated basically all predators, most disease, malnutrition, combat... Like all the things that basically I was made by God to do,
and even though you spent much of your youth trying to undo all that
advantage,
you're still here. You are
here. I am, and so because I woke up in the middle of the night on the other day, just apropos of nothing, on the verge of an anxiety attack, like rising panic. I woke up, and I could feel panic rising in me, and I'm sitting in my room in the dark, and I'm like, I beg your pardon.
There's literally no stimulus.
What are you doing? How can you, and I had to sit up and turn on the light, the whole thing, a pace around my room. What are you doing? How are you on the verge of panic? And I realized it was like a mortality moment where I was like, well, one day I'm going to be trapped in this decaying body, laying here, struggling to breathe.
And you hadn't been consciously thinking or dreaming about this, but somewhere in your... tissues.
Dreaming about dancing girls like I normally do. But no, I woke up like, I'm going to die. And so for the last couple of days, I've been walking around like, yeah, you should be dead, in fact.
When I think about all the money these guys are pouring into their supplements, their daily regimen of, this is the thing that's going to keep my cognition 1.6% better if my calculations are correct. Uh-huh. Like, what if they just poured all that expense into a nice, a Buddhist friend or a therapist?
Or a composting coffin.
Right. Right. But just something that to help them, because clearly this is something they're using on the day-to-day level to confront exactly what you're talking about.
It's antioxidants, right? Isn't that what we're all talking about? Antioxidants.
It's just blueberries. Like this guy's pouring millions of dollars into stripping out something from blueberries into a powder that he can take every morning with his kombucha. And instead, that same money could buy him a very nice, motherly or paternal therapist that every week could tell him, you know what, we are all going to die.
You know what?
And it's okay.
You are loved.
You have today, and that's all we have.
Also cosmic background radiation.
But for some reason, all these guys are like, nope, that's the scam. Like, trying to make me appreciate every day, that's what Satan wants.
Oh, is that right? Are they against psychology?
I'm not saying they're Scientologists. I'm just saying there's a fundamental choice you can make when you confront the specter of mortality and a cold universe that will go on without you. You can either say, okay, well, how do I work within that? Or you can be this guy to be like, you know what? I think I can hack that. Yeah. I would like to hack death and transience.
I mean, my number one fear has for a long time been to have a bag put over my head and then put in the trunk of a car in handcuffs.
Well, it depends. I thought that was your number one fantasy. It depends on how it ends.
Well,
right?
Yeah, I guess. But I mean, I just, with a combination of claustrophobia and a fear of being tortured by the police, which for several years was a legitimate fear, I felt like.
Those are both rational things. You're making it seem like other people want to have bags over their heads.
You see it enough. But then I saw this movie. What was this terrible, terrible movie? It was a terrible movie. And I think it starred Charlize Theron, a wonderful actor. Someone I celebrate her entire catalog.
Is she kicking butt in it?
It is some kind of supernatural butt kicking.
Atomic and, Blonde?
No, Flux. They were Eternals. They lived forever.
That's Angelina Jolie, not Charlize Theron, and it's called Eternals.
Oh, that was Angelina Jolie?
Huh. I don't know. We could be talking about six different movies.
Anyway, one of the characters in the movie was an Asian Eternal who was a witch or something in the medieval times, and they put her in a cage and threw her in the ocean. And so every day every 3 minutes for 1,000 years, she came alive,
was still in the ocean,
in a cage, and drowned, and then was revived, and then drowned again. Over and over. I should have had a trigger alert for those people who have not seen this terrible movie.
Or people who just fear drowning every 3 minutes.
Yeah, drowning in a cage. And
it's got to be the same.
And it got
the cage has got to be round air if you're drowning every 3 minutes.
But it made me feel like this is one of those genie things where you live forever. You ask to live forever, but you have no idea that
what Twilight Zone irony will.
Yeah, exactly. Not only do you break your glasses, but you drown in a cage.
That goes back to the ancient Greeks. There's a guy named Tithonus who asks the goddess of the dawn for to live forever. And they're like, sure, but he forgets to ask for eternal youth. So he lives forever, but he just keeps withering and desiccating until he basically becomes a grasshopper.
And that's
where grasshoppers come from. The Greeks love that kind of thing. their twist ending is always like, and that's why the river Colchis has those weird trees that droop a little bit.
Well, so you're bros, because you are bros with more billionaires than I am.
Why are they my bros?
Well, you've got at least one billionaire bro.
I don't have any. Who would I have who's a billionaire bro?
Isn't Jeff, what's his butt? Old Bezos? Muscle bro? Isn't he?
He's looking good.
He is. He's fit. Is he the one that's going to fight Elon Musk in a cage? No, that's like
Zuckerberg.
A weird bro.
Yeah.
I mean, they're both weird bros, but.
Yeah, Jeff Bezos appears. I'm not friends with Jeff Bezos, but he just when you see how fit he is with his new girlfriend, it appears that he's kind of following this idea that the most important thing is that life and health be extended as long as possible. And when you're in bad health, that's an understandable thing, when you're in bad health, you're like, wow, I just realized nothing else matters because my tummy hurts, and literally nothing else in life. Like, how can I think about my family or the thing I want to write or Gaza. How can I think about anything when my tummy hurts?
Is like, that what that Metallica song is about?
That's, nothing else matters. It's about a
my
little tummy ache.
Hurts.
Yeah. Did you not know that?
I never listened to the lyrics.
Jibs Hetfield had eaten a little too much carob. No, that song is about love. But in a cool, kind of dark, hard rock, but soulful, metal, but still soulful.
Yeah.
Kind of way.
I'm into that.
Kind of way. So it's not like, it's about your girlfriend, but like, it's not gay in the way that songs about guys and their girlfriends kind of are.
Totes.
Isn't that kind of a funny thing, the idea that there's something unmasculine about a song about a guy who's in love with a girl? What could be less heterosexual than a guy being in love with his girlfriend?
I'll tell you what, though. Being in love makes you less reliable in battle. Because you, although the U.S. military really prefers that their officers be married. So
something to fight for?
I guess so.
It probably just makes they do less crazy lifestyle stuff.
Yeah.
Married people are boring and reliable.
Yeah, right. They're not buying Mustangs with their GI Bill.
It has something to do with like their performance with a bayonet or their...
Isn't that something, though, in corporate life where being married is kind of necessary to be promoted? You're not going to be a single CEO, right?
Yeah, I don't know. Who are the... Well, not the aforementioned Jeff Bezos.
He's not married? He didn't marry the new girlfriend?
Not yet, I think.
Oh.
I don't think Elon's married.
His marriage didn't work out. Either one of them.
Elon is famously the most divorced man in the world.
Yeah.
You can't. There's no higher level of being divorced than this all sucks. I'm going to declare war on wokeness and my own companies.
I love it when a billionaire gets divorced and then their divorced wife instantly becomes one of the top 10 richest people on earth. It's like, oh, good work.
I mean, it's a really good use case that we now have all these billionaires who are like, oh, Melinda Gates and Mackenzie Bezos are now just wildly more popular than their exes. I need to I need to like work on my marriage,
yeah.
I think.
Maybe if I live forever, I can outlive my spouse.
Well, you know, we're kind of dancing around this central question, which is, you know, what is the life well lived? Mm. And to a certain kind of number crunching denizen of the 20th, 21st century, to a modern, it seems like it's indefensible that, well, the more life, there's a utilitarian answer, the more life, the more health and the more life is the answer. Like if the problem is death, how do we cure that? Religion once seemed to offer possibilities, but these are moderns and rationalists.
If the problem is death.
Unhealth and then the inevitable result of too much unhealth. You know, for a lot of us, when we were talking about how a tummy ache messes up everything, you know, one solution for ill health is death. It's often, it's often a mercy.
It's a good solution. You're almost 50.
Yes.
But you live a healthy life. Are you starting to see friends die?
Yes.
Friends your age?
Friends my age. I've had a couple high school classmates die, like not people I was keeping in touch with, but it's always shocking. Somebody I know better has a cancer scare and he's now 50-50. We know somebody who actually passed away this morning, although she was quite a bit older, but...
I just went to a funeral the other day
of
a friend from college who just got, he had an ache in his shoulder and went to the doctor, and the doctor was like, oh, you have terminal cancer, you have weeks to live, and then he died. And he was, you know, an absolute paragon of outdoor life, incredible skier, beloved by all. But I'm right at that age and, you know, in my culture, right, of rock people, I'm still losing friends to overdoses. So it's a weird place where it's like, I've always lost friends to overdoses and suicide because of the life of the artist. And now the cancer deaths and oddly, cirrhosis now is starting to catch up to ODs.
Also the rock.
Yeah, it's just like, oh, he didn't die of an OD. He just really literally like 30 years of drinking. But I'm at this spot where a lot of my friends are talking about death in this kind of like, death is the problem. And I'm increasingly wondering, like, wait a minute, is death the problem? Are we trying to solve for death?
I mean, I honestly say the case you just mentioned of a, you know, someone with a fit, amazing life who is told by the doctor that soreness means the cancer is metastasized that you didn't know about and you're going to be gone in a matter of weeks. There's kind of something nice about that, honestly. I mean, that's somebody who was never, you know, unnecessarily troubled by pain and other lifestyle destroying accoutrements of death.
Yeah.
Didn't have time to agonize much.
His last day, someone requested a song for him on KEXP because he listens to KEXP. And he's laying in his hospital bed with KEXP, the radio station, on.
Local indie rock and, you know, independent music.
And they start dedicating every song to him. And for an entire day, every song was dedicated. His name was Ken. And so they, for a day, they called it Ken EXP and played.
I didn't hear this. Just
songs for him all day. Because it turned out he had, you know, he knew a couple of the people that worked there. Like he had his finger in every pie. So it was pretty nice, right? I mean, he didn't know he was sick a month before.
To me, those stories seem just, I don't know, they resonate with me much more than, you know, I've spent decades working on the problem, and I think if I take this much omega-3, I have, you know, I can maybe stretch it out to 98.
The thing is, to be 55 and die of fentanyl in a parked car out by the airport also is a thing where...
It's sudden.
In that case,
I'm going to imagine decades of maybe not ideal happiness leading up to the labored fatal dose.
You labored in sadness, but who doesn't at some point?
Who among us does not? Yeah, so I mean, we're dealing with just unanswerable questions about like what really is, how do you solve life?
Yeah.
And the idea that it can be hacked is a little bit upsetting to me, but...
You would like to keep living.
But we all would like to keep living. Even if you say, you know what, You know, I watched my grandpa waste away and I was sad. You know, please put a bullet in me. Like, there's something deep within you that does not want that.
I mean, there are people listening to the show when you said, we all want to keep living. There are people listening who rolled their eyes at that.
Nope.
Like, speak for yourself, cowboy.
Well, if they're listening to the show at this point.
Oh, but this is, right, inspiring them.
No.
I want to keep living just to hear the end of this episode.
No, I thought you were saying I was inspiring them to, like, go drive their car into the bay.
Oh, no, don't do that.
No. But I'm just saying if they really are unhappy with life, but they're still alive and listening to podcasts, they've really failed.
Well, there's something. There's a light. They see a light through the clouds.
Potentially podcasting.
Potentially. Yeah, maybe it's just our voices.
Next week's show.
The comfort of you and me. I mean, this show is one of the things keeping me alive.
I was not trying to endorse or even have a take on taking your own life, actually.
Oh.
But don't.
Because I'll do an hour on it right now.
That could be next week. But, you know.
Have we done assisted suicide? We haven't.
What do you mean, as a topic or as a...
As a topic.
As a practice.
As you and me clearly, sitting around riffing over Mexican food? Of course we have, but...
I mean, clearly we haven't tried it out. We're still around.
True.
But, you know, perhaps the most... Of all the wacky pseudosciences that have arisen out of our, as you say, maybe 60-year obsession with hacking health and the body and life and fitness and finally defeating death, the last enemy... you know, none is more interesting or really gets to the core of this question, this fundamental question, like cryonics, in layman's terms, the freezing of the newly dead, the recently clinically dead, in hopes that someday, you know, just punting the question, technology will allow them to live again. This trend will continue of health and whatever. So instead of striving now with all my omega-3 and my blueberries and my superfoods, let's just punt that to future generations, because inevitably there will be a point where I can be saved and immortality will be assured, and I'd like to pick it up again there.
See, I always hope that is UFOs who are going to beam me up and use UFO technology to go through my body and eradicate all cancer and scar tissue and reconstruct my knees and my broken bones.
But unless you think they're going to do that to all 8 billion.
Oh, no. Humans. Just me.
Yeah, but this is like wanting to win this is not a solution, John.
No, because
I'm turning into one of these Brian Johnson tech guys now. You need a plan. You can't just assume they're going to beam you up.
Well, no, that's my plan, because I feel like they have a use for me. There are a lot of people, I think, listening to the show that think that I'm some kind of crazy egotist.
When clearly this is a rational idea.
Yeah, but...
That the non-existent aliens would pick you.
I do feel like if the aliens were going to pick a resident, an anchor man, a local guy.
Local area man.
Area man. Because it's going to be hard for them to convince people of, you know, of their peaceful nature. There's going to be all the conspiracy theorists who are like, oh, they're here to sap our precious bodily fluids and mine us for platinum. But I feel like if they're going to pick one person to say, like, remain calm, all is well, they could do worse than me. But before they do that, they'd have to, you know, repair some of the sinew.
There's an infinite possibility, number of permutations of alien races out there that could do this.
Yes.
And you're choosing to imagine the one that would pick you.
Well, I mean, multiple universes.
I don't want to say it's narcissism, but it's certainly, you're certainly picking the hypothetical aliens that make your plan work.
In a
it's
world.
Optimism.
Because I believe in quantum, you know, because I'm a, like a math guy.
Yeah, science has told me.
Because I'm a science, I believe that this is the universe where that happens.
Well, science would tell you there is such a universe.
Yes.
It might not put you in it.
Well, I also believe in manifesting.
I see. The more I think about being in that universe.
But anyway, you're saying that this is a kick the can down the road philosophy, kind of like mine. But
yeah,
but this is one where future science will care enough about your frozen body to both care enough about you to thaw you out and fix aging.
They have to fix several things, but yes, something to get you back on your feet. Or, in the case that just your head was frozen, like ball player Ted Williams, to make new feet for you and then legs, torso, neck, and then put your head on it.
See, now, I always thought that that word was pronounced cyrogenics. And then I said cyrogenics, and then I said, oh, wait, you're saying it's chirogenics. And you said, no, it's not chirogenics. It's chironics?
Cryonics.
Cryonics.
Yeah.
Even when I know that I am pronouncing it wrong and try to pronounce it right, I'm still pronouncing it wrong.
Cryogenics is the actual science of low temperatures, the behavior of particles, the behavior of the universe at low temperatures.
Oh.
Cryonics is the mid-20th century coinage.
Cryonics.
That we're going to discuss today. And it begins with one guy, basically.
Walt Disney.
It begins with Walt Disney in his vault under Sleeping Beauty's castle, rotating to keep all parts of him equally frozen at all times. No, yeah. I've been to his grave in, where is it, like Glendale? Where's that forest lawn at?
I don't know.
I think it's up there somewhere.
Sure.
I've been to his grave, so.
He didn't like Orange County any more than anybody else?
Yeah, too much traffic. Like,
bury me in Pasadena.
I mean, the Disney studios were right there in Burbank, so it's convenient. John, let's be disruptors.
I'm ready.
Let's disrupt.
Arr.
Not food delivery or taxis or any of the other things that got ruined by disruption.
That stuff all got really disrupted.
Let's disrupt pillows.
I'm in it. I'm in it to win it.
People have been doing pillows wrong for a long time.
You know, I use pillows.
Many people use pillows like every night.
Do you use pillows?
Every night.
And
for about 8 hours.
Do you and Mindy have different pillow needs?
We do, actually. Like, I prefer a flatter pillow than she does. She likes to sleep in a weird position that requires a body pillow.
Oh, she hugs her pillow?
Yes.
Does she have a husband foo?
Yeah. It actually looks like her favorite anime.
George Clooney?
Speed Racer.
Oh, Speed Racer. Yeah. He's a demon.
But, you know, the perfect pillow, the pillow that will change pillows.
Oh, I do. I know where you're getting.
It's a buckwheat-filled hello pillow.
It is. These are the pillows. You can hug them. You can flatten them out. You can throw them all around. They're jamming.
Unlike a regular pillow, they will take the shape that you need for a comfortable sleep. And they will conform to that.
So your different pillow needs when Mindy or you make the bed in the morning, is there asymmetry to the way the bed is made? And does that bother either of you?
No, I think Mindy will put her body pillow elsewhere. Also, honestly, we don't make the bed that much.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I always thought of you guys as bed makers.
It is a great feeling when you're like, look at that made bed.
Yeah.
But you know what else is a great feeling is not having to spend 5 minutes making the bed.
The only time I make the bed is when I put on fresh sheets and I make it because I just put on fresh sheets and look at it.
So once a year.
And I'm like, look at that, I say. And then it's never made again.
But the buckwheat pillow has so many upsides. Not only will it keep a comfortable shape that's better for your neck,
it's cool.
Yeah, it stays cool. Yeah. It's natural. It's not filled with any weird artificial foam that might be in your pillow.
Or degrading.
Or feathers, which is a weird thing to sleep on.
No, I'm allergic to down, so I can't sleep on feather pillows. But also, I find the kind of rustle of it very comforting.
ASMR folks, listen up. We have invented a new product advantage of hollow pillow. It gives you a soothing whisper all night long.
Well, and the wonderful thing about hollow pillow is they make it really easy to become a hollow pillow stan,
sleeper.
Like we are.
They don't want you to risk anything. They're willing to send you a hollow pillow and give you 60 nights to sleep on it. 60 nights in a row.
60 nights.
And if you like it and it changes your life, you can keep it. And if not, you can just send it back for a full refund.
And it's not like they invented hull-filled pillows. This is an ancient practice.
Traditional Japanese way, among other places.
That's right. That's right. So here's what we're recommending you do. You go to HulloPillow, that's HulloPillow.com/omnibus, and you'll get a discount of $20 per pillow, depending on the size.
If you try more than one.
1% of all profits are donated to the Nature Conservancy, where they presumably plant things that grow more hulled hulls, buckwheats.
Maybe they grow more buckwheat.
Mm-hmm.
You'll get fast free shipping on every order. And you can think about it as a gift idea with the holiday season coming up.
Oh, that's nice. Good
Who do you know that's always complaining about not getting a good night's sleep?
My pillow doesn't rustle enough, they say.
Why is my pillow getting so hot? Why doesn't my pillow have enough buckwheat? Find that person in your life and send them a hollow pillow.
That's the other thing. You can get two hollow pillows and take some of the buckwheat out of one, put it in the other, and you'll have a bigger, firmer pillow and a smaller, flatter pillow.
Are you recommending that listeners jailbreak their hollow pillows?
Yeah, well, I'm just talking about how to make your marriage with Mindy a more equitable.
It is a very customizable pillow.
Yeah. Anyway, give the gift of better sleep. Hello is a unique gift, and just go to hellopillow.com/omnibus and try it out now.
Robert Ettinger was a child of Russian Jewish immigrants, you know, so Jew turned Unitarian turned atheist because like a lot of, he fought in World War II, had a Purple Heart, like a lot of men of that generation, a man of science, became a, you know, got master's degrees, advanced degrees in both math and physics, and wound up teaching both subjects to high school and college students in Michigan, where he settled down. And like a lot of those post-war science kids, you know what he loved was science fiction.
Yeah.
He loved Amazing Stories magazine.
Like where the aliens came down and changed one man, made him the anchor man for the future broadcast.
Science fiction really is the culture-altering thing where these kind of doofusy guys after work writing these stories about satellites or whatever, they literally change the world. They, not just the technologies they create, but the thought technologies of, you know, people now thinking about, well, let's prepare for a world where technology does more and more. When will technology take over thought and humanity, and what will that culture look like, and how do I make sure I'm there for it? Like, it, science fiction broke everybody's brain, basically.
Think about all the people that really define our current world who at some level you have to think really believe that spaceships, I mean, they don't believe it, but that they spend so much imaginative time in a world where there's hyperspace that like real life has to be a massive disappointment to them every day when they wake up and like, still no hyperspace.
Boy, we could be in a, I mean, people describe that, regular nerds describe that kind of feeling of, well, I had to see Avatar 38 times because the glowing bioluminescent moon of Pandora is better than anything in my commute. And like, I just gotta do another rewatch of Star Trek because we don't have replicators and holodecks. And maybe sometimes the subtext is, and I don't have a girlfriend, so. But yeah, seeing a perfect world all the time, maybe it goes back to Sir Thomas More. It's religion has the same thing, right? Like you imagine a perfect world, but the idea is that it gives you hope, not that it makes you despair of your current squalor.
Well, but yeah, right. I think there are a lot of sci-fi fans who defend their obsession by talking about the hope it gives them.
I mean, that's the thing. Like, yes, isn't it great that with Star Trek we can now imagine this diverse and hopeful future?
Yeah, but in fact, it's just like incels hating the world, right?
Well, I mean, even if it's just a self-fulfilling prophecy, like there's going to be upsides to working toward that world. But, you know, when I look at all these Peter Thiel types, you know, pumping out their blood and making sure they irradiate themselves with vanadium twice a month or whatever it is. I think, you know what, if we hadn't had pulp science fiction, like maybe we could have avoided all this.
Well, so was your introduction to science fiction primarily through movies or through books?
Whew.
Because I think I'm just old enough.
I think I had Star Wars, space opera, but really nothing else until books.
I feel like
so my
Heinlein ideas, and
I guess that's not true because of Star Trek.
Asimov, like I was given the Foundation trilogy before I saw Star Wars.
Wow.
And it was too young to understand it. It was difficult, but I was struggling through it at a time when Star Wars was released. And there'd always been Star Trek, I guess, my whole life there was Star Trek. But I thought of it as a literary field before I thought of it as a movie world.
All these people thought of themselves as intellectuals. You know, they were, we're grappling with the big ideas while you're all reading your Jacqueline Suzanne and your Sidney Sheldon.
Yeah,
you know, we're thinking about, you know, and their books are full of goofy stuff too, but they're like, no, 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 we are the thinkers. And that transformed society because those people gave us the internet and then everything changed.
Oh, those bastards.
I mean, they really do have a lot to answer for. And I grew up, you know, my parents were like, my dad especially is one of these post-war science fiction people who thought of that as a, you know, an exciting threshold that we were about to cross as a species.
Right.
And was excited to be here for that time of it.
Does he still feel that way?
I don't know. Like his, I don't know. His relationship with science fiction now is probably very nostalgic, actually.
Yeah.
Likes sci-fi because probably cause it reminds him of the Tom Swift books he was reading as a kid.
Because a lot of those sci-fi books were like, were much more Twilight Zone-y. They were less about space travel and more about
ironic human nature and
endings. It's like, oh, it turns out that incest is no longer a taboo on planet X. You know,
a lot of them were repressed sex things. Yes.
Yeah, yeah, there was a lot of that.
but you're right. A lot of them were just like, this is the imagine a world that has never imagined some of these tropes. Like young Robert Edinger reads a story by Neil R. Jones about someone dying in space and their body being perfectly preserved in absolute zero. To the degree that when future non-biological based life finds them, you know, they're later discovered by robots in 1,000 years, and they were able to revive the person and just worship their biological brain, something they've never seen.
Whoa.
So for these future computer people, it's like they've discovered God. And you and I can see this as a mishmash of tropes we're all familiar with, the suspended animation, the space traveler, the difference between, you know, the androids who think of their human creators as gods, you know. We're aware of all these ideas and we're like, yeah, 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 you know, two stars. But to those kids back then, they were like, what? There could be a society that wasn't biologically brained and they would, you know, wait, and you could die and you could return. And this is not religion, but it's science. Yeah. I mean, maybe you can remember being a kid and the first time you read some thing in Omni magazine that had one of these tropes in it. And
yeah, you were like, A Wrinkle in Time.
Exactly. Yeah. Like it was brain expanding. And that's what happened to Edinger. That story really made a mark on him because a lot of those stories did have that trope of suspended animation as a way of getting astronauts out into deep space or of a way of, Connecticut Yankeeing your way to the future.
Yep.
And
totally into that. I mean, how much time do you spend in your day thinking about time travel or some kind of, you know, metaphysical switcheroo where you are transmutated into some other place or some other thing? You're such a nerd. You must be doing this half your day.
No, but I have flights of fancy like that sometimes. And I kind of wonder, did that happen to people? You know, in Mark Twain's era, were people thinking, boy, what if I had...
If I could take the steam engine back to 1500?
What if I had the strength of a locomotive? Or do they even have the ability to think about parallel timelines? Were people even like, boy, if I had actually asked Marie out, you know, in when she lived next door, would my life have been different? Like,
is that something intrinsic?
Could we even conceptualize the sliding doors hinge of parallel timelines, alternate lives?
It's too bad that the novel wasn't invented a few hundred years prior.
Yeah.
I
guess the fact that, you know,
people have always inserted
themselves into stories and, you know, mythology and religion had fantastic elements that maybe could stand in.
Well, you know, and Frankenstein.
Yeah.
That's been around for a while.
But that's the reason why Frankenstein's such a crazy paradigm shattering, scare making property is because, but nobody had considered like turning a corpse back to life, and
she wrote it over the course of a weekend, so
it couldn't have been that much of a.
Well, she that must have been already percolating in her, you know.
Like a lot of these guys who read these short stories, you're talking about the discontent. Ettinger starts to feel like immortality is not coming soon enough. Like this should, maybe he's a neurotic guy. He's mm-hmm. already worried about health and stuff. And he sees that this amazing promised future is not coming fast enough to affect him. You know, like, boy, what if it's my grandkids who get all the fancy vitamins and radiation and...
we were promised jetpacks.
And it's too late for me. Yeah, where's my jetpack? And he writes a story in 1948 called The Penultimate Trump about someone like him who... A reference to the last Trump of the Book of Revelation. And about someone like him who is able to, facing that same problem, decides to punt it to a future generation by putting himself in suspended animation. And I'm going to wake up when all my health problems are solvable by science. And I don't know if that's the first time this idea makes it into fiction. But for Edinger, it wasn't just a story idea. Like, that was something he was worried about a lot, even in his 20s and 30s. And by 1960, he's really hit a midlife crisis of like, wow, it's, you know, he's younger than us and he's already thinking, boy, it's all downhill from here. And he decides to do something about his story idea. He thinks like, we need to make this a possibility. Like, why is nobody trying to fund freeze me until we're in a golden age of health and immortality? So he does what anybody would do in 1960. He goes to the library and gets a copy of Who's Who in America. Uh-huh. And starts writing letters to likely seeming prominent people saying, dear sir or madam, here is my pitch. Please support my new society. Who's Who is a scam, by the way. It's not a scam. They still exist. Have you ever looked at one of those Who's Who in America books?
Oh, yeah.
You know,
because there were libraries always in Seattle, too. I mean, every little town had one.
Well, the original Marquee Publishing Who's Who, which was borrowed from a British property, actually did have kind of an editorial board trying to keep up a very strict standard of who could be in Who's Who. Like, they didn't even let athletes in until, you know, the mid-20th century at some point. But their business model was always like, and then these people, these local Chamber of Commerce people who are up here, will buy themselves a copy.
Yeah.
You know, so we can sell these fancy hardcover sets to all the 1,900 people who appear here. And that makes it profitable even if...
No one else
cares. Even if no bookstore ever carries it. Because how else would you get this book? Did they even sell it mail order like the encyclopedia?
I think this was also probably that 20th century time when there were all these like can-do, aspirational business types who would buy this for the association, like, well, I know all the who's, you know.
Yeah, here's my my peer group here.
Yeah, these are my, I'm not in it yet, but.
But you're right, it spawned all these knockoffs within specific fields. Who's Who in Seattle, Who's Who in...
electrical engineering.
Yeah, it could be in different fields. And often these were just kind of vanity press things where if you submitted yourself, you'd pay to get into the list and then you'd get a copy. He picked 200 prominent Americans and thought by sending them a letter, convincing them of the sincerity of his belief in freezing, that he would have the best and the brightest get on board. And he was bummed to find out, no, all those people have someone screening their mail. There was very little interest, no checks arrived. Dear sir, we would like to fund your fledgling freeze me idea. But... he writes his own book trying to be more convincing, you know, a mission statement. He calls it The Prospect of Immortality. And at first, I think he self-publishes it. Finally, he sends it out to mainstream publishers. And somebody, I think Doubleday, gets it in front of Isaac Asimov. And because some editor is like, is this guy crazy or is this a thing? Should we be thinking about freezing our brains?
Call Asimov.
Until he'll know what to do. Isn't that funny? Mid-20th century. Who's expert on everything? And Isaac Asimov reads through it and says, yeah, the science is actually sound. Like, there's no reason to think maybe this couldn't happen.
It's a good thing someday. They didn't call Harlan Ellison.
Right. A crankier story. And Asimov never says, the great thing, because here's the core thing about this vision, and here's what makes it a pseudoscience, is that it's not falsifiable in any way. Even its proponents are saying, this is impossible. But imagine a time when it's not. Uh-huh. You don't want to be the one who's in the ground when that generation comes. You want to be in a tank somewhere.
Right. You know what's interesting about this? This is happening before the notion of overpopulation as a threat to humanity, right? That started in the late 60s. So in the early 60s, it still wouldn't have occurred to anybody that in the future there would not, they would not want to unfreeze you just because they didn't need any more people.
I mean, that's the core problem. Like, I don't see a lot of this community addressing the, what if they don't want to thaw you?
Yeah, right.
Like, why should they see a responsibility to your ass?
Because you'd have to endow yourself, right? That's what the billionaires are thinking. They endow their own cyrogenic, cryonic. They endow their own cryonic
fund,
so their little temple has power to it because some law firm is obligated to keep paying the bill.
Their estate dictated such. There's many a wrinkle here. The financial side is interesting. We can talk about that in a bit once we actually start freezing people. But Asimov Sinoff gets Double Day to publish this thing, and it's a hit. Book of the Month Club, nine languages. Suddenly people are talking about this new idea. I don't think I had realized that this was just some one guy's overnight, basically, neurosis, you know, manifesting itself in the mid-60s. Because suddenly he's on Carson and David Frost and Steve Allen talking about why shouldn't we freeze ourselves?
But this isn't a novel. It's like a science book.
Yeah, this is an essay. The Prospect of Immortality is one of these, today it's one of the most common genres. Like, I'm a future guy here to tell you that this is the future.
Yeah.
And in the early 20th century, that was just weirdo Kreskin types doing that. And today it's half of publishing.
What would your future book be?
My future book.
I mean, I guess this whole podcast is a future book.
This is a topic very closely related to the conceit of the omnibus, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. We're hoping to be cryogenically preserved in our crazy...
I mean, the problem with our generation is we got all the Star Trek optimism, this baseline idea that things were going to get better the way they had for the Eisenhower kids,
right.
And then they manifestly did not.
Yeah.
And so we're kind of dealing with the dystopian hangover.
Well, we were already cynical because our parents were all getting divorced, and I had my house key around my neck on a piece of red yarn.
We do this show to guilt the boomer parents who could have stayed together, and
it was even worse. Star Trek was feeding us all this utopianism, and we already knew it was baloney when
exactly.
we were 8 years old.
You know, you turn to the news and you're like, well, I hate to break this to your perfect multicultural future, but, and then on the science side, on the science and the social sides, you know, stuff just didn't track with the speed that we all expected it to in the space age.
We should have kept going to the moon in the 70s. That, I think, that would have
if there was shag carpeted anything on the moon right now,
yeah.
Think how different our approach to the universe would be.
If you could be jogging in a giant circular space station.
I guess what I'm saying is my futurist book would not be so rosy, sadly.
But
we need people like Ettinger who are like, I have a crazy idea that'll fix everything.
Yes.
Here it is. If nothing else, for entertainment.
Sold.
The problem is the early world of cryonics is not the high-end scientists in white coats and spotless labs you would like to imagine doing this sort of thing. You know,
it's a guy that runs a cold storage place in Lake Havasu.
That's exactly what it is.
Oh no.
Like, this was a DIY industry for decades.
Oh no.
Like, the word cryonics was not coined until 1965, and when it was done so, it was by an early enthusiast who had read Ettinger named Carl Werner, whose day job was designing the patterns of tire treads. And this is the guy coining the name for the science as well as, you know, renting the lab in, you know, there was a, and when I say lab, I mean, there's a warehouse in Chatsworth or in Butler, New Jersey, or somewhere out on Long Island.
Where they're keeping butter cold and they've got pallets of whippet.
The first company to do this was in Phoenix. It was called CryoCare.
It was in Phoenix.
And it was.
I was only 100 miles off.
No, I mean, to this day, the industry is centered in Scottsdale.
Wow.
It's where...
I must have known that.
I guess it's just where old people with too much money would be. You need to be close to your tube at all times. You don't know which bite of peanut brittle is your last.
Yeah.
It was a wig maker named Ed Hope who founded CryoCare. That's who you want doing your futurist uh-huh. science, right?
Uh-huh.
And because he thought there was money in it. He was like, well, if this is the next big thing, I want to be the Zuckerberg of it. He wouldn't have said that. He would have said Henry Ford of it. And he lasted for 2 years until he realized this was not a money-making prospect. He had not come up with the financial side that runs the industry today of people committing their own estates to this early. In the early days, this was all young people reading the book and then deciding this is what had to happen to grandma.
Right.
Whether she was on her deathbed or in fact had died in many cases 6 months ago.
But later it became like an estate planning?
Yes.
Whoa.
So in the early days, you were just dependent on the next of kin to keep sending that check.
If grandma's been dead 6 months, it's a little late, right?
That did not trouble them in the early days because this is all just a kick the can strategy. Someday, you know, the technology doesn't exist to exhume anybody now. Better safe than sorry. You know, someday we will have the technology. So
in the grandma's brain was goo.
In the early days, they were, there's one woman who died in 1968, who was an early cryonics preservee. Her body had been autopsied. And if you know what that means,
yeah,
they had just gone through every organ and tossed them back in random order. And then frozen her, and her son was just basically hauling her around in a truck in dry ice for months until he found one of these kind of fly-by-night operations that would stick her in a tube.
That feels a little Freudian.
Did
he live in a motel out by the
out
on a stretch of
Norman
dark
Bates.
Row?
That young man who no one liked grew up to be Norman Bates. There were three science fiction hobbyists with day jobs who are saying, hey, I've got the money. Let's rent that space your mom has out on Long Island.
Yeah.
And we'll put people in them. And the early accounts of these places, you know, the Cryonic Society of New York sounds like a very high-minded operation, but it's just some kids in a filthy office with candy wrappers everywhere and dirty streaks in the carpet and, you know, handprints on all the tubes, not on the inside, I hope.
That's what would have happened at the moon base, too, I'm almost certain.
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, everything. It's always
gross.
Entropy is just a race to the bottom. Yeah, space always looks so nice and clean.
Yeah, except the movies. In Star Wars, that's what made it so clever.
Star Wars invented littering in space.
Yeah.
Genius.
Dirty space.
Dirty space. What if you had to like, I mean, it's because he came from car culture. He was like, you know, it would be badass if they had to like, you know, if they were welding, if they had to soup up space.
Oh, right.
So that's why you get all the.
He's a hot rodder.
He's a 50s hot rod guy, and he thinks space should be like that, like do it yourself in your garage space.
Is that a well-known interp of Lucas?
I think so. I mean, because imagine, I mean, just if you see American Graffiti and then you've seen a pod race,
yeah,
you can see what makes this guy tick.
Yeah, right.
He's just a teen that misses cruising. So this cryonics facility out on Long Island actually flies a pirate flag.
Oh.
To keep the neighbors away.
Oh, they're hacking deaf even. They're like cool bros.
Yeah,
even then.
They're like badass sci-fi
Sweet.
Nerds.
Sweet.
And the technique is well understood pretty early that you you take a Dewar flask, basically a giant thermos, a person-sized thermos, so that you've got, you know, if you put liquid nitrogen inside it and then you have a layer of vacuum between the super cold part and the outside, you don't lose heat. And then you just put a body or bodies in there, head down, because that's where it's coldest.
Or bodies.
Yeah, in many cases, there would be, you could fit three people in one of these.
Oh, no.
I like how this is your objection. Well, I don't, during the interval period, I would not like to be shoved up next to some granny.
No, I mean, I
Do you not understand how cemeteries and crematoria and columbaria work?
I'm not only claustrophobic, but agoraphobic. Why would I want to be in a frozen tube with two other people, even if they were relatives?
Claustrophobic introverts need not apply. The problem is it's not perfectly insulated. You know, you insulate as well as you can, but there's still going to be some boil off. So the expense, there's not power, except in the case of one kind of new technology, there's no power to any of these cryotubes or pods.
Really?
No, it's just occasionally somebody needs to top off your liquid nitrogen.
Okay.
You're on board now.
Well, no, but you got to be making liquid nitrogen.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's carbon neutral. I'm not saying it's putting power back into the grid. Assuming you can get a liquid nitrogen delivery.
I see.
From somewhere.
Yes.
I'm just saying you don't have to worry about power outages, for example.
Right.
But the fact that it was also low tech meant that there were just decades of horror stories in this industry. You know, you're already worried about the claustrophobia of it. There was an early case in the lab in Chatsworth where suddenly there's a last minute addition. Somebody flatlines, whose family wants them brought in, and you don't have a tube, so they're trying to figure out how to put a fourth person into a three-person tube.
Stat! Get that liquid nitrogen.
That's what happens. They call it a jigsaw puzzle of how you can Tetris, you know, where, can you put her head between his legs?
Oh, Jiminy Christmas.
Like, just how? What's the best way to pack, in the same way that you're trying to pack, you know, fruit to put the most on the most tomatoes on the truck.
Why is this the thing that bothers me more than any of this?
Yeah, I have to say,
I really don't like it.
There's many, many worse things coming. The accounts of this are horrifying, and we should warn listeners of if you're still carbon based life in our time, and because if you're
or in any time,
well, if you're a computer, you're like, yeah, who cares if something gooey happened to these other life forms? You know,
they literally are using us for the power grid.
There were cases where relatives would stop paying and sure. They would just stop re-upping somebody's liquid nitrogen.
So wait, but if there's seven people in a tube, do they just pull one of them out?
I guess.
Or do you get sort of grandfathered into a...
I guess maybe maybe you just put less nitrogen in, and when the last person goes, you stop refilling altogether. Hmm. So tubes would just thaw and fester because they would just stop topping people off. In some cases, an accidental thaw would be discovered months later. Hmm. So there would, you know, you'd suddenly check it out and be like, oh, this guy hasn't been cold enough for weeks. And when they checked, they would find that bodies were literally cracked. There were terrible, when reporters would try to do stories on these vaults, there'd always be a terrible stench. One attempt at doing this in Butler, New Jersey had really badly insulated pipes. And so the owners didn't know this, but the bodies were just thawing and refreezing all the time. Oh. And at some point when they discovered the depth of the problem and started actually checking the contents of the tubes, many of their, residents, many of their...
In the neighborhood, or you mean the people? The interred.
The interred, yeah. Many of their patients, let's say,
yeah.
Were basically at this point just a plug of fluids at one end of the tube because they'd thawed and refrozen so many times.
The old plug of fluids, that's how you want to end up.
You know, in our show on green funerals, you know, there are many destinies, and none of them are pretty, but frozen plug of fluids might be the worst.
See, I like the idea of being put into a compost pile. And sure, maybe there's somebody below you and somebody above you, but you have your little bit of dirt that you're turning into.
You want a little Japanese love hotel after you die. You need your own little shelf.
But you're becoming your own dirt. And maybe it gets mixed with other dirt, but only after you're dirt. You get that time to yourself to dirtify.
It's me time.
But to be a frozen plug of fluid in a tube with other frozen plugs, that doesn't seem like how I want to be.
That's because you're Dr. McCoy, and I'm Mr. Spock saying, John, molecularly, what difference is there?
Damn it, Spock! There's something to
you,
the soul.
Inhuman, green-blooded freak. Huge racist, Leonard McCoy.
Ken, it's been a long time since we've had an omnibus t-shirt, wouldn't you say?
It's been too long, and we would like to rectify that. We've got the biggest shopping season of the year coming up.
It's winter holiday season in the whole world.
Except for the Southern Hemisphere.
No, they also celebrate winter holidays even in their summers. That's what makes them such a weird culture.
But they don't call them winter holidays.
Oh, what are they don't call them winter holidays.
No.
Right.
They probably say Christmas because they're all imperialists.
Oh, sure. Everybody south of the equator is an imperialist. But I mean, the new year is a summer holiday.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, right.
The winter solstice is a summer holiday to the degree that they call it the summer solstice.
Oh, weird.
Freak show.
Nuts. Well, as you know, as well as I do, that shipping costs to the Southern Hemisphere are prohibitive enough that nobody down there is going to order our omnibus Christmas shirt.
We're not even talking to them right now.
Yeah, go listen to your podcast, why don't you?
This is for the United States and possibly Canada. I didn't even check.
Woo! If you live in Mexico City, I bet you can get one of these shirts. But otherwise, if you live in Denmark?
If you live somewhere I want to visit, I will bring it to you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
If you have a cool spread in New Zealand,
oh,
I'll bring you some shirts.
Okay, that's cool. That's an offer I wasn't expecting.
No, and it's not enforceable, so sure. I'm going to continue to make it.
Good man, good man. Tell us about these really cool Christmas shirts that we're having made.
They just have a holiday theme. It's the Omnibus logo in red and green with a Christmas pickle from one of our previous year's holiday shows.
Christmas pickle.
It's very cute and festive and fun, but also like... it's in a cool way. It's
yeah.
not. It's not like in an ironic. Oh, look at this Rudolph sweater I'm wearing. It lights up.
Well, here's the thing: if you are celebrating Kwanzaa, or if you are celebrating any of the other winter holidays like Hanukkah or Festivus,
Mindy actually asked, "Should we have a blue and white one for Hanukkah?" And I said, "Honey, even if you make it blue and white, there's still a Christmas tree ornament in the middle of it."
Like, it's a Hanukkah tree ornament.
Do people hang pickles from their menorahs? I have to say no.
The thing is, the pickle, as you recall from listening to the show, is really a non-denominational pickled vegetable.
Possibly a-religious.
Right? A-religious.
People of all faiths and none at all enjoy a nice crunchy pickle.
Well, some people like a soft pickle.
What?
I know. So
those people don't get a nice Christmas.
If you and your significant other or friend or relative have some dispute about which is the best pickle, you can get multiple Omnibus t-shirts and then claim that your Omnibus pickle is the pickle of your preferred orientation.
For the Omnibus listener you love, it's an amazing gift idea. And for the Omnibus listener you hate, just fill their stocking with soft pickles. As a punishment.
Wrapped in this t-shirt.
Wrapped in this shirt. And smelling of pickle juice.
Whatever you do, buy a shirt for every single person you know.
If you order before December 1st, it's guaranteed to be delivered in time for, let's just pick one of the winter holidays at random and say Christmas on the 25th.
It will be available to you. It will arrive in time for the last day of Hanukkah.
It might not actually.
Maybe not.
Isn't that the 15th this year?
Yeah.
Well, it probably won't, but it will be here by the 25th.
Okay, by the 25th.
Just to pick a Christmas, winter holiday.
So the last day of Hanukkah, you can say to your disappointed kids, look, there's one more present coming.
It's coming on day 18 of special extended Hanukkah this year.
But Kwanzaa, it will be there on the first day of Kwanzaa.
It'll be there early.
Yeah, so it can be waiting under the Kwanzaa tree.
It'll be on day -1 of Kwanzaa.
Yeah.
Special pregame gift.
Pregame gift.
Go to omnibusproject.com/store to check out the cool new festive t-shirt design, and have a happy holiday from all of us here in the Omnibus Bunker.
Ho, ho, ho.
But there are advances in the field. You know, by the 1970s, the people who know what's going on in chronics and like know how shady and fly-by-night is, and all the Ettinger acolytes who read Prospect of Immortality are kind of horrified. A guy named Saul Kent gives up on the whole thing and moves to Florida, where he still being one of these kind of proto-transhumanists types, gets in on the ground floor of mail-order vitamins.
Oh, cool. Okay.
He basically invents the idea of taking antioxidants at a time when no end user, no American consumer knows what an antioxidant is.
This is hyper vitamin C people who have now bounced to a whole new universe.
That's right. And this is very early. You know, the early 1970s, it's like, you know, this is kind of starting to reach a broader America for the first time.
Yeah.
This idea that you should be taking a whole lot of weird non-FDA approved supplements, or what are you even doing?
Supplements that we now know you pee out almost immediately.
Exactly. We did a show on hypervitamin use.
Yeah.
What's it called?
Hypervitamin use, our famous show.
Supravitamin?
Vitamita Vegemin.
I can't remember what we called that show. He calls his new, he and his partner call their new vitamin selling business the Life Extension Foundation. So it's clearly just, you know, cryonics, but without the plug of fluids problem.
Right.
It's the same audience. And
again, we should have some pretty clear evidence whether or not
this works.
That works by all of the 95-year-olds who are still jogging to work every day.
What about that? You ever see in old airline magazines, there was always that old man who is really buff.
There's oh, yeah.
That ad with that old guy
sure.
who's just like still like chiseled torso.
Oh, you still see him online. They pop up all the time, these guys.
That guy's got to be dead.
75 years old and pumping iron.
It's got to be some kind of implant.
It's just photoshopped. I mean,
it's just photoshopped.
Look, I recognize a shoop when I see one.
So he decides to pour, the vitamins are such a hit, he decides to pour $200,000 into a side hustle called Cryovolta. And this is going to be the new space age. This is going to finally be body grandma freezing done right.
And that's $200,000 in 1970s dollars.
That's over half. That's probably about $500,000 today, right?
I don't know.
Getting close.
You're the one that knows that stuff.
I'm always just making it up and I say it confidently. He has two partners. One is a guy named Michael Fyodorowicz, I think, who, was such an, appalling new atheist, proto new atheist type in high school that is, you know, he must have been in some Midwestern state where he was always the one yelling at his teachers about evolution.
Oh.
When they tried to get him to say under God in the Pledge of Allegiance or something.
Right.
And so he actually, his friends renamed him Darwin, and he decided to become Mike Darwin. So in the cryonics community.
Oh, he changed his name.
He changed his name to Mike Darwin.
Another, 100% he had a chainmail shirt. 100%.
That's what I'm going to do when I'm not going to be one of those buff old guys. I'm just going to get a chainmail shirt.
It's going to work as well as vitamins, I bet.
Probably better.
If it's small enough rings, you might even keep out background cosmic radiation.
And certainly Nazgul blades, if it's mithril.
If it's mithril.
There are other principals, a guy named Jerry. I like how we're making fun of nerds. And then we're like, let's do 90 seconds on mithril.
It also glows in the presence of orcs.
The other principal is a guy named Jerry Leaf, who was special forces at one point. And maybe just said he was. Like,
figures.
Like most people who are special forces.
Stolen valor.
It's probably half of them really were. This guy I think actually was, but he became a... he had some experience in hypothermic techniques in hospital settings. He was in medicine. Okay. And so he actually had some expertise in what the industry is doing here, unlike these dopes who were just like, well, put her in dry ice, I guess, or I don't know. Is anything colder? Go get the Britannica. What's colder than dry ice? These guys came up with a new protocol, which kind of reshaped the cryonics industry, which is, you know, finally some best practices.
Mm-hmm.
When the person's approaching clinical death, I mean, legally you have to wait till they're clinically dead to do any of this.
Mm-hmm.
By US law, you can't just toss grandma on liquid nitrogen. And there's good reason for those laws.
Clinical death. Okay, go on.
You know, the heart stopped. Then let's do all the things you would normally do. You know, like you could donate organs, for example. But in lieu of that, those, you know, starry-eyed altruists who are actually donating their organs, what if instead you woke up in the year 3000? Instead, you put that person immediately into an ice bath, preferably within the first 2 minutes after the heart stops.
So you got to have an ice bath there. It's something you have to wheel into the ER.
See, this is, we're starting a new era where we're actually going to do this the way medicine is done and not the way three guys who read Amazing Stories in 1948 would do it.
Got it.
So you have an ice bath there. You take them to a mortuary where a surgeon needs to, like, basically expose the femoral artery and, you know, IV you up in a way that they would if they were doing a transfusion. But in this case, what they're going to do is take out your blood. Replace your blood with something, you know, cryoprotective, you know, something that'll preserve the oxygen.
What's that?
I mean, the problems here are often related to water. Water becomes ice. It expands. It gets a crystalline structure.
It breaks things.
That's really bad, yeah, because when it expands, you get all these problems. First of all, it expands in a way that, first of all, when it forms ice, the solutes come out of it. So you get ice, and then you get all the other stuff that was in that bodily fluid, but now it's concentrating in ways that are just terrible for tissue.
Yeah, plug a goo.
Yes. Then you've got the physical problem of ice just squishing all the cells. You know, your cells don't want a big ice dam pushing down on them.
No, they don't. I hear from them all the time.
That's the main thing cells want.
Stop doing that.
The other thing they want is to keep their water so that they don't get all dehydrated. So they've got two problems. They've got ice squishing them, and they've got dehydration from within. So even before you get to the, you know, the actual chemical and molecular stuff going on, you've got these huge physical problems of what you're doing to this.
So what is a media that does not do that?
They've got a name. It's, you know, the industry standard now is called like M32 or whatever. And I think they don't want to tell you what's in it, much like Hostess Twinkies, because it's essentially antifreeze. It's going to be something with probably a lower freezing point. But also, I mean, they're going to, you know, you're going to be brought as close to zero as they can get you. I mean, past the freezing point, obviously, they're literally gonna freeze you. What you want, I think, is something that doesn't crystallize. Like, it's possible to vitrify something, like flash freeze it in a way that, if you do it fast enough, and if you've replaced enough of the water with something that doesn't crystallize, you get kind of a syrupy goo, kind of a solid liquid, like a slow liquid, you know, where it doesn't have the crystal properties that are problematic, but it's just kind of a cold amorphous soup.
But you can drain the blood out of a thing, but you can't replace the water in cells. Especially not if the thing is already dead, right?
There's a series of... So after this, it gets taken to a cryogenics facility, a cryonic facility, where a whole bunch of cryoprotective perfusion happens. Like, all these different procedures that, as you say, need to get as much of the water you can out of every cell and or, you know, freeze what's left, preserve what's left in a way that doesn't cause crystalline ice problems.
They need a bunch of halal butchers.
Is that who knows this stuff?
Well, like kosher butchers at least would be useful in some of this.
Do you think that kosher meat has all the blood pumped out and antifreeze pumped in?
I don't think that's the thing. I don't think they put the antifreeze in, but they do get the blood out.
And I don't want to, you really can't overstate the number of problems that can appear at this point. I mean, you know, there's going to be swelling and you're going to have to be like, well, can we live with that much edema? Are we going to have to actually do surgery? Like, surgical-like procedures have to happen at this point to try to keep the organs and tissues in as good a shape you can. And really all this is kind of dancing around the question everyone has, which is, well, does this work? Is there evidence that this works?
It feels like the technology that you would need to preserve somebody like this is also the technology you would need to reanimate them. And so you're trying to do a thing that you...
It's an article of faith in the community that the point of good preservation will be arrived at before the point of reanimation.
Right.
And they will say, hey, we don't know when that point's going to be hit. Maybe it was in 1980. Maybe there were people frozen in 1980 that are restorable given the future level of technology that produces it, you know, that brings it about.
Right.
It could be that we're actually 1,000 years away. We don't know.
It's like developing a good sense of what a good pop song is. You can understand what a good pop song is a long time before.
Sooner than you can write it.
You can write a good pop song.
And that's, without it, we wouldn't have rock criticism. So thank goodness.
There it is.
Thank goodness for all those people that know something sucks but cannot make something good. It's not just in music. That's in all fields,
right?
It's in
all fields.
I mean, this idea of the idea of cryonics as a concept that we should freeze ourselves to live in the future, it actually came up around the same time that laboratory cryopreservation was happening. Like, it almost, the early science fiction stories predate anybody trying to do this well. Mm-hmm. The study of, you know, cryopreservation, even trying to get tissues to freeze, really only started in the 1950s, and it's not very good. It still has very severe limits. I mean, obviously, I think we know that there are some, you know, we freeze blood.
Yes.
There are cells we can freeze. We freeze blood and it's fine. You can freeze sperm and it's fine. I think we all know you can freeze embryos now, and those can produce viability. Although I think we also now know, like, the science is now old enough that we can kind of start to see, you know, for many months, they didn't know how good the COVID vaccines were because there was no way to have months or years of data. It was a new thing. I still wonder which of my DVDs are going to decompose, because when the technology was introduced, there was no way to say, well, these will for sure last for 30 years because nobody had ever burned a DVD before.
All that great music that's on DATs.
Somewhere.
So wait a minute. Are frozen embryos, what's the success to loss ratio?
I think there are now frozen embryos that are decades old that have been revived.
Interesting.
Or that have been fertilized, or no, an embryo is fertilized, that have led to successful gestation. But I think we also now have some data showing that you can watch the likelihood go down the longer the embryo is frozen.
So you could literally be a woman who carries
Hitler's baby.
Or
it's too late for Hitler.
Your sister.
Oh, I see. Yes.
Heavy, man. Whoa, trippy.
Yeah. I mean, if it's decades.
Yeah.
All kinds of weirdness is possible.
Yeah. Okay. Where's my Harlan Ellison story now?
Now you're having your mind blown. You're like, boy, I could get 2 cents a word if I wrote that up for Hugo Gernsback in the pulps. This mostly works for individual cells and for thin slices of tissue. Mm-hmm. It's, because if we could do this to hearts and livers, it would be great. It would, you know, not for because of these weirdos, but because of the
transplant,
the organ transplant industry would be a game changer.
But we cannot.
No.
You have to restart a heart, but a liver, you can't. Do you have to restart a liver?
I mean, you have to go into the BIOS and change some settings, uh-huh. I think. There were cases where in some of these early labs, there were cases. I think in one case, somebody's estate stopped paying and said, we're only going to pay this much. And the company said, well, for that, you can have the head.
Okay.
And so in 1983, Alcor, a new player in the market, and to this day, they're still around 40 years later. They're one of the two big players in the cryonics world, plus a Russian outfit that I wouldn't recommend.
I didn't know you were going to make recommendations.
Oh, yeah. I'm the consumer reports of this stuff.
Good, good.
They had to go in and basically they said, well, we got enough money to keep the heads. And in the cryo industry, it's widely thought, hey, you know what? Any society sufficiently advanced to bring back somebody who died of emphysema in 1980 can totally clone them a new body.
Sure. Just Nixon in a jar is all we really need. Just the head.
You want your thoughts and memories. That's what you're buying.
Yes.
So here's what we'll do. For a smaller rate, we'll give you our chainsaw off the head package. And that's right. What they did. They went in and chainsawed off these heads.
Frankly, I don't want my old body at all.
You'd pay extra for that.
Yeah, get rid of this thing.
Wow, this is going to...
Used and abused.
This is a huge revenue source for Alcor if they realize they can charge more for just the head. And I don't like my double chin either, so maybe I don't need my whole head, honestly. There are parts of my head I could do without.
Well, where would you cut it off?
I need the brain.
Yeah.
I need these eyes.
Yeah, but you'd want...
But I want eyebrows.
You'd want eyebrows, right? So...
I need some way of keeping what's above the... Mm-hmm. The brow here, but not back here, but not up here.
I think I have a pretty cute nose.
You want your nose?
I think so.
I'm not married to my ears. They're kind of flappy. I've got really good teeth.
Yeah, unfortunately, I got all my teeth knocked out in fights.
I don't have any cavities. I want my
what? You don't have any cavities?
I have a few cavities.
Jiminy.
I want my brain and my teeth.
Okay, brain and teeth.
And that's about it. And my eyesight's pretty good. I want my corneas too.
Well, my eyes are all screwed up too.
You don't want anything. You just want a brain.
And my nose.
Your brain and your nose in a jar.
Yeah. And I like my gray eyes. Brain, gray eyes, but I want them to be able to see.
But here's the thing. Science can duplicate
okay.
a well-shaped nose.
Yeah,
that's a piercing gaze, right?
That's right, of course.
If they're going to cure the, you know, because as we'll see, there's 1,000 other problems you have to solve. Beyond like, well, what did his nose look like? So when they chainsawed off these heads, they had the ability to study bodies that had been in cryonic freeze with their technology going back to the 70s. So they had a decade to look at. These bodies were in terrible shape. Like it wasn't
even the ones that were frozen.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. These are the ones that were frozen the whole time. And you don't even have to get under a microscope. It was like, wow, did you know his spinal cord was broken in 3 places?
As a result of,
this was not somebody that died in an accident that broke their spinal cord in 3 places. This guy died happily at home, and then cryonics broke their spinal cord in 3 places. Like their intestines no longer connect. They put dye through their circulatory system, and it doesn't get anywhere. It just leaches out into the tissue immediately. So that's not holding water.
This all seems like desecration of bodies.
Yes. And really, they're just hiding behind the fact that all those people asked to be desecrated eagerly.
Oh.
They all went to weird futurist meetings for decades about how great it would be to be desecrated.
I see.
That's why they're not getting shut down by Uncle Sam, at least. So I guess, you know, cryopreservation of living creatures, it's iffy. Even the seeds that we store, you know, I think we've now been freezing seeds long enough to see some drop off in germination potential after a few decades at below zero.
But we keep trying to reanimate, not reanimate, but take DNA from from ancient mastodons and clone them, right?
Yeah.
But cloning is a whole different episode.
So the cases of actual long-term cryopreservation of, you know, eukaryotic animals, basically, you know, multi-celled real creatures, sorry, bacteria, it's limited to nematodes, little roundworms that did get trapped in permafrost, like a mammoth, mm-hmm. and then have been able to be successfully thawed. And their, I guess, the rudimentariness of all their systems means we've been able to thaw some of these little guys out, and they work. And that's the hopeful thing that all these starry-eyed transhumanist cryonics nerds are looking at.
Like, I'm not hopeful about thawing prehistoric nematodes.
No. That it can be that tech means it'll work for them.
Oh, I see.
They don't care about the worms.
No, I don't want dinosaur worms.
Maybe that's why you're going to freeze yourself, so you can be reborn in a world that's even further from dinosaur worms. There are cases in nature of certain species of frogs that for short periods of time have the ability to survive a flash freezing in a sudden, cold mud or cold water or something.
Yeah.
But that's very different from the decades or centuries it would take to cure froggy prostate cancer. You know? Do frogs have prostates, John? You've probably looked into this.
I mean, I've desiccated a frog. And desecrated.
Did you say desecrated or desiccated?
I desiccated it.
You dissected it.
I dissected it. I don't remember looking for its prostate.
No, in what order did you dissect, desecrate, and then desiccate this frog?
I didn't desecrate it. I mean, unless dissecting it in a high school biology class is also desecrating.
Yeah, I mean, to a Buddhist or a Jain, maybe. Yeah. But you think of all the hypotheticals that have to be met for this to be a success. You have to assume that we will one day have the technology to cure the thing that killed you. And that could be old age, you know? Mm-hmm. So it has to be technology to cure the thing that killed you and or the effects of aging, because you want youth as well. Mm-hmm. We have to have the technology to undo all the damage done by time and all the damage that was done to you to preserve you. I mean, that's kind of, when you ask actual aging scientists about cryonics, they will say, look, it doesn't matter if science ever cures lung cancer. That lung cancer victim is not coming back because of all the terrible things the cryonicists did to him to get him into the pod.
Right.
That's the main thing. You have to assume that that society survived long enough to get to that point, and that the cryotube company survived and kept you around. You have to assume that that future society wants to thaw you. Mm-hmm. And I don't really
see any use case for thawing people from the 80s.
I mean, didn't they watch Wrath of Khan? It's kind of a
Khan.
But I think there is a Star Trek hopefulness where let's forget about Khan for a second and think about, well, of course those people will, I imagine a society so perfect that it will agree with me in all ways. Well, and that would include wanting me back.
This is the time travel problem, right? That people who want to time travel to the future want to time travel for selfish reasons. They want to see the future.
It's good to see what's in it for you.
Yeah, but the future has zero interest in people from the 20th century showing up and being like, I don't know how anything works, and everything I know is in the history books.
I mean, it would be annoying if you were renting to that guy, but like, as a culture, I think we would be super interested if it was like, hey, here's a one-off chance to bring back somebody from Genghis Khan's Mongol army. Yeah,
briefly we would. And then we'd realize, like, they're idiots. Whereas if you travel to the past, like, you're a Connecticut Yankee, right? You have all, you're like, guess how to make matches.
You've got a lifetime full of secrets. Yeah, so they assume you. And then the final assumption, which I assume a lot of these groups must talk about in their kind of weird conferences, are you going to be happy? I mean, you were assuming.
Yeah.
First of all, I mean, there's the broader question. You were assuming that death was the problem and that immortality would make you happy. I think that's almost certainly not true, that whatever, wherever you go, there you are. And immortal you is going to have all the same neuroses and maybe new ones caused by the new unbounded nature of all your problems.
Well, billionaires assume that they're going to be unthawed and be billionaires in that time and so be able to, like, you know, waltz around.
Yeah, but they're not happy now.
Yeah.
You know, like, right? I can only assume.
I'm sure they're not. 100% sure that there's no happy billionaire.
And then consider this, you're in a totally alien society where all your loved ones are gone, all your reference points are gone. Nobody understands your jokes about Gilligan's Island. And, you know, what would it be? I mean, we have tons of fictional examples now. This is not a foreign idea because we're all aware of this idea of what the challenges would be of suddenly waking up in a new time or revived by aliens or whatever.
Yeah, but maybe there's a Leela who you can fall in love with who rejects your affections.
There are
seasons after seasons.
I mean, I think a lot of the funny thing is more recent advances in this realm have kind of made chronics look a little bit obsolete because a lot of the ways of reviving somebody would be just kind of maybe extracting the patterns of their mind somehow.
Right.
And, you know, uploading consciousness in some way.
Uploading consciousness, right.
To the degree that you don't need the body in a jar, except I guess as a, maybe they're still saying, well, you're going to need that repository until the technology exists to digitize me.
Yeah.
I want to make sure I'm preserved in a tube in Scottsdale. And I think the jury's kind of out science-wise on how much of you would be preserved. Like to what degree can the inactive brain without, like even if the preservation of all the tissues, the molecular state is the same, if that thing's not firing,
yeah,
does, to what degree does consciousness stay and to what degree would it degrade over a month, a year, a century?
I mean, what will happen is that there will be a reproducible facsimile of Ken Jennings.
Well, that's the...
But that Ken Jennings will not be you.
That's the core psychological question. Why not?
Well, because it won't have had a continuous thought of itself.
Because you want that chain of consciousness.
Yeah.
That's what the transhumanists want.
For us to die and then there be a...
A copy Ken, of you keeps going.
Yeah, Ken and John still talking in 2400.
Here's the problem, though. That's completely illusory. You don't have a chain of consciousness to the you of yesterday.
Oh.
You woke up this morning and were able to think back and be like, nope, that was me. I have all those memories of doing that stuff. Therefore, I am John Roderick.
Right.
But there was no complete chain. I mean, you could go more granular and say every minute you're kind of jolting awake and being like, I'm still here and I'm me with those, with my me-ness. And any sense of continuity is something I'm creating second by second. Because that's what consciousness is, this weird epiphenomenon of thinking you're still you.
Who's the Harlan Ellison now?
Did I just blow your mind?
Whoa. But we're still holding our past selves accountable. Like your past self still is responsible for you owing student loan debt.
Legally we do, but maybe that's the secret to inner peace is to think, I am no longer past John. I am no longer past Ken. Their mistakes are a previous version of myself. Today, I'm a better version, and maybe I cannot make those mistakes. Actually, that's a pretty good self-help movement.
Sure, kumbaya.
Is that a thing yet? All this is the fault of one guy having a midlife crisis in 1960. And
who are the most prominent, chirogenic people now?
People who are currently frozen?
Or like advocating being frozen?
So Timothy Leary was famously going to freeze himself. He had the team ready to go when, as he was, you know, because he was sick for a while. So I think for weeks or months, there were people trading off with an ice bath ready to go.
Futurelings, if Timothy Leary has survived, don't unthaw him.
No. Here's the thing. Oh, okay. He wimped out at the last minute.
Oh, smart man.
At the last minute, he was like, just kidding, cremate me, lol. And all those transhumanists sat Shiva for him for nothing while he was dying.
He was like, I'm done.
Ted Williams and his son are famously have their heads on ice somewhere.
Okay.
Most of the more
baseball player?
Yeah.
Oh.
I think he had a son who got him into it. And so they're both on ice somewhere. Nobody super famous is preserved now. And as I said, all the early preservees, many of them didn't make it. And the earliest one that did, I think it's the late 70s. And they're all presumed to be in bad shape. A real philosophical argument in this community is once the technology is here, of course they're going to be eager. But who should be unthought? Who should be thawed first?
Uh-huh.
You know, do you start with the more recent ones because they have the best chance of getting out of it,
right?
Or do you start with the oldest ones who put in the time, who put in the hours? Like, you know, these people are so sure this is going to happen that this is what they're arguing about at their conferences, like where they are in the line.
You got to start with the first ones, right?
There's a lot of tech people, and it's exactly the flaky ones you'd expect, like Peter Thiel, who are
He seems like a real tool.
Who are, yeah. And coincidentally, he is actively very, he's very vocal about how he's going to be frozen. And this is his key to immortality, because if that's what we're going to need, all eras are going to need more Peter Thiel.
Boy, I'll say.
Making things good. But I just think this could all have been avoided. Like, you know, one guy has this middle of the night crippling death paralysis you're talking about.
Yeah.
And he thinks we need to start putting people in big thermoses. And well,
he should have just been laughed at like all the kooks.
No, he should have. He needed a warm embrace from someone.
He just,
you know,
needed a hug, like
this,
I do.
To me, this is a case of like men will literally do anything other than go to therapy. Men will literally freeze their whole families in a lab in Scottsdale.
Well, because getting hugged is effeminate, Ken.
Not to me, John. Not to me. Bring it in.
I believe that. Yeah, welcome death.
Exactly.
Yeah. Death is our friend.
It's almost certainly an end to suffering.
Yes.
Let's leave out the conception of hell for the moment.
It's somewhat inevitable.
Of all the things you need
as
to get used
now.
To. Right. I mean, these guys, that's what these guys are hacking. What if it wasn't inevitable?
Yeah.
No, let me tell you something about existence.
Yeah.
Like, existence ending is all bound up in existence. So, you know, like.
I like that.
I don't want to say be here now, but like that's not the way to live.
I feel like existence ending is all bound up in existence is not as catchy as be here now, but it'd be a pretty cool t-shirt.
You need a bigger bumper on your car.
And that concludes Cryonics, entry 302.1C1535, certificate number 48643. In the omnibus. Futurelings, we all know that social media died an inglorious death and was not preserved.
It's a plug of fluids at the bottom of your browser.
That's right. It's in a tube with all the other failed experiments of the early 21st century.
And hopefully all the CEOs are as well.
And some of those plugs of fluid are called Facebook and Instagram and X.
I love X. I love posting on X.
You're still on X, aren't you? Are you posting on Blue Sky now more than X?
I feel like I post on neither, but Threads. I kind of like, I keep an eye on both. I have a weird, Ebenezer Scrooge looking into the past kind of relationship with both of them now. They can't see or hear me though. Those are just, they're just shadows of the past.
You can still find at Ken Jennings and at John Roderick archived in some plug of frozen goo.
Cryo posts.
But you can email us in the present, in the now you. The now you can email us at theomnibusproject@gmail.com, and the future Ken and Johns, who will be the now Ken and Johns at the time, will be able to read your email and talk to future yous.
Yeah, it won't be us because we won't have the chain of consciousness.
Right.
But.
Blah, I just re-woke up in this moment and can only barely remember the me of 30 seconds ago.
It had many cells in common, blah. But you have no accountability.
Whoa.
I mean, legally you do. Don't murder anyone.
Yeah, that's the problem. You can hang out with other futurelings and discuss this and many other topics on Facebook, on Discord, on Reddit. I actually stumbled upon the Omnibus Reddit the other day and had a very enjoyable romp over there.
Oh, yeah. I think we often say it exists, and I never go there.
I never go there either, but I found it because I was doing something else, and then I followed this to that and this to that, and then I suddenly was on Reddit.
Is it lively? It's not like a single post from 3 years ago about the Johnny Appleseed entry or something?
It's fun over there. People talking. There's one guy that doesn't like me very much, but somehow still listens to the show every week.
A man selling ice cream.
And then the other people, you know, there's always the one guy that doesn't like one of us, but then it's always a guy. But then there are other people who kind of tiptoe around them. Like no one ever confronts them directly.
Hey, why are you listening to this show where you only like one of the hosts?
Yeah, why don't you screw off? They're always like, well, you know.
If you only like one of them, just listen to Roderick on the Line or watch Jeopardy.
Yeah, there you go. Those are our two other spaces. Let's see. You can send us actual mail as long as it's stuff we want.
Don't send us Ted Williams' Frozen head.
No.
It might not get here in time.
Actually, don't send us Frozen anything unless you make special accommodations.
Yeah, I just realized I haven't checked the mail in a couple of weeks. If you sent us any Frozen embryos for us to check the viability of, or because you want us to have your baby,
Grody,
it might not be in good shape.
Neither Ken nor I are currently able to have babies, although the future may hold.
Again, in a transhumanist world, I'm going to have...
Your own
six hands, child. Six hands and a uterus.
You're going to have your own grandpa.
That's the dream. Six hands and a uterus.
P.O. Box 55744, Shoreline, Washington, 98155 is our address. And most crucially, for present and future Omnibus.
Yeah, we don't have an estate fund continuing our preservation.
No. If you want to, if you want to keep us from becoming... frozen plugs of goo, go to patreon.com/omnibusproject and support the show with a financial contribution of some manageable size.
Something so manageable to you would really bless your life. You'd get the weekly, the month, weekly. Let's not do a weekly. You get the monthly addenda show at higher levels. There's all kinds of other fun perks and prizes. Go investigate if you haven't. Listeners, from our vantage point in your distant past, we have no idea how long our civilization survived. Long enough to thaw us, hopefully. We hope and pray the catastrophe we fear may never come. But if the worst comes soon, this recording, like all our recordings, may be our final word. But if providence allows, we hope to be back with you soon for another entry in the Omnibus.